Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Welcome, beautiful people, to Keeping It Real on Purpose. I am your host, Edna White. Today, we're not just going to talk about writing. We're talking about the brutal necessity of truth. Our guest ventures into the shadows, the places where society hides its trauma and its rawest stories. He's an author, an educator in juvenile detention halls and classrooms of refugees, and the host of the Shadow Work Writers. We're asking these uncomfortable questions about craft, conscience, and control. Get ready to dismantle the lies. This is Sean Anthony Michael, and we welcome you to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much, Edna.
You're welcome. So tell us how you show up in the world.
It's wonderful. I mean, it very much depends on where I am. When I was a teenager, which inspired me to write this book, Whistlepunk Falls.
Yes.
When I was a teenager, I viewed it as you need to be yourself all the time. You know, you need to be authentic. Don't be fake. You don't want to be phony. But I noticed that as I age, I find it useful to have a box full of not masks, I wouldn't say, but maybe different hats.
Yes.
And so today,
that's easier. Yeah. Yeah.
As you can see behind me, this is my high school classroom. I'm a high school teacher to immigrants and refugees. It's a public high school here in Seattle.
Okay.
And so I show up here as I have to be buoyant. I have to be optimistic. But I also have to listen. I need to listen to what my students are telling me. Sometimes not with their words. We speak different languages. So sometimes words aren't easy, but I have to listen to their body language. Mm-hmm. I have to listen to what they're conveying and trying to tell me through their behavior. And Edna, you might have heard this before, that behavior is communication.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
When young people are behaving in a certain way, they're trying to tell you something. Even if it's behaving in a strange way, like my character behaves in some strange ways, he's trying to tell the reader something. He's trying to tell his friends something and his family something. My students too. And so I need to show up with a big pair of ears to listen to my students.
Yeah. Okay, that's really good. I love that. I love that you speak to students and get them at their best stages, even though it may look like it's bad. It's the best stage. It really is, because you can intercept that and make a change. So I love that.
I agree, Edna. I think that adolescence was, you know, I think Flannery O'Connor said, you know, if you survive past middle school, you have enough to write about for your whole life.
Oh, absolutely.
And I tend to agree. I think for me, high school was a beautiful time. It was the best times, but just like Charles Dickens says in Tale of Two Cities, best times, worst of times. I made some of my best friends. I texted with one of my high school buddies today. And I made some of my best friends then, but I also had some of my darkest times.
Talking about writing, because I know you showed your book back there. Show it again. There you go. Okay. So talking about writing, what's one of the dangerous, comfortable lies that you as a writer can tell?
So, I mean, I think a comfortable lie is that something Steinbeck wrote in East of Eden. And I love that book. I love Steinbeck. He's a white-bodied author, and I'm a white-bodied author. And he said this, you know, from the lonely mind of the man, alone is where genius springs from. And it's like that's not true. Like that's not true. Like when I'm by myself, you know, I mean, and it's paradoxical because writing is done often alone, but I need to have my readers read it. You know, I need to have some friends, some loved ones read it, because sometimes they're messed up stuff that I haven't dealt with yet that comes out in my writing. I don't mean for it to, you know, I mean, particularly as a white bodied author, and I have some black and brown characters in my work, you know, especially with that stuff, you know, I need to make sure that I'm having my people who care about me, but also people who are aren't me, you know, and that can look at it from a different perspective, to call me on my stuff, you know, if I have some of my undealt business coming up in there, you know, my biases or whatever that I haven't dealt with yet, or that I'm unconscious of. So I think that's the biggest, that's the biggest comfortable lie. I'm enough. The lonely mind of the man, you know, whatever I write is genius and you all buy it, you know, like maybe that in Hemingway's day or in Steinbeck's day.
Yes, maybe, because nobody was reading it back then, but that's okay, you know. That's so beautiful, but yet brutal. That is so beautiful, but yet brutal, what you said. I'm telling you. So what's one act of dismantling that lie can we do? Can we as writers, because we both are writers. I love that you are.
And I can't wait to read some of your writing, Edna. I haven't read any yet. I got to get on that. So I think that we have to share. We have to be bold. We have to be courageous. We have to share our writing with people we love, with people we trust, with people who are different than us. You know, and definitely in the process of writing this book, I mean, I had three editors, two I paid. And I mean, even before, long before it got to that point, I had my wife read it. I had my best friend read it. And then I had some other folks read it too. And so, yeah, I had to share it. And that's can be nerve wracking and scary. You know, cause I think we carry a lot of shame sometimes about things we create and from past traumas we may have, or just, you know, not feeling enough. But we got to share it with readers first and then listen to them, right? Back to the whole listening thing, listen to their feedback. You know, if
that's uncomfortable, that part right there is uncomfortable. You know, it really is. That part you just said is so uncomfortable to listen what they say and take it and kind of, you know, move on with it, you know, okay, let me use that to kind of make it better, or maybe use it later on to update the book or something, you know, but that part there for a writer is so,
You know, I feel like the one thing I tell my students, or I've told my students in the past, is that, you know, each piece of writing is just like every person, you know, it has inherent worth, but it has infinite potential. You know, some teenagers are like, no, don't, I wrote it. It's perfect as is. It doesn't, it's like, it has worth. It is worth it. It is inherently worth it. But it has infinite potential for you to improve it as much as you can.
I mean, it's true.
I forgot what critic, and that's true for all writing. You know, there was a critic who said, there isn't one young person in this planet that could improve a Shakespeare line or two. You know, like Shakespeare's stuff, it could be improved. You know, you could
Almost everything, though, because you know, nothing is outside of growing if you don't allow it to expand. And it's nothing's outside of that. Everything expands. Everything has the propensity to expand. That's really cool. I know that, you know, I don't know if you experience where you are, but they're kind of taking some writings out of schools and things like that, right? And I know that a lot of it is honesty. You know, the books that inspire honesty, you know, to celebrate culture and those truths and those things like that. What do you believe is crippling the pursuit of honesty for us as writers?
Oh, my gosh, that's so good. Yeah, I mean, luckily I'm in Seattle, and so it's a very... But, you know, we're like a center right of... Yes. Of Castro, you know, we're very liberal. Yes. We're very liberal. And so we don't have any of that going on, thankfully. But yeah, I hear about it and it breaks my heart because you read to expand your consciousness. You write to expand your consciousness. Right. And if you're not doing that, why are you reading? Why are you writing? You know, I mean, I took a risk and I had a character who's Native American, and that process, you know, was about a 10-12 year period of expanding my consciousness to be able to write as a Native American person, you know, as I'm a white body person. And so, I think that that's, and what was your question originally?
I love it. I said, we're talking about, you know, what's actually crippling the pursuit of honesty for writers.
What's crippling the pursuit of honesty? I think it's power. I think it's good. When we as writers are, you know, we're wanting clicks, we're wanting likes, we're wanting followers, we're wanting,
yeah,
you know, there's a kind of, you know, we need to stray from certain truths, mm-hmm. you know, about ourselves, about the world, mm-hmm. about our neighbors. And there's a kind of power that comes with that. You know, what mm-hmm. if, are people going to click or like or yeah. read me if I'm nuanced?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I think power.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, that's so good. I know when I was writing, and I write about a lot of trauma and things like that, you know, in my own life, you know, and then kind of dissect it with the generational trauma and things like that, and habits and all of that great stuff. It's wanting to be accepted in the commercial world, because we don't talk about those things in those commercial worlds to sell your book. No, right. those things are like taboo, you know, and talking like the things that you write about as well. They're not in the mainstream of, you know, a publisher coming and grabbing you, you know. Yeah. And I think we miss the good work of people when they are writing to be commercial, like you said. To, you know, that's what I'm thinking it is. Like, to be in the mainstream, it's not really that great. It's like hollow words, you know, and right. there goes the honesty. Honesty is gone.
And yes. And I am so thankful of the writers that do go there
yeah.
and that do make it commercial.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Toni Morrison, mm-hmm. I think someone has taken up her mantle, and yeah. It's the author of, I just read it. It's called Let Us Descend.
Mm-hmm.
It's a novel by the same person who wrote The Men We Reap. And right. she, I forgot her, I'm blanking on her name. She's from Mississippi. She's an African-American professor. Okay. And she goes there. She goes to the trauma. She goes to, yeah. you know, racial and gender, but mm-hmm. also personal. And mm-hmm. she enacts it out in her work in a way that's very lyrical, very symbolic, and it's yeah. really reminiscent of Morrison's, I think, greatest work. So yeah. it's really cool when you come across writing that is commercial but is still right. doing that work.
Yeah, right. yeah, yeah. And I applaud those publishers who do, you right. know, allow you.
Jesmyn Ward. Jesmyn yes. Ward's her name.
Yes, yes, I applaud them. So I want to flip the script now to talk about your book, because we only got a few minutes, and your new book, that Whistlepunk Falls. Let's talk about that. Tell me how that came about, and, you know, give us some little insights on that new book there.
Yeah, so I this is inspired by my high school experience. I had a very tight friend group, and we saw a couple people in our friend group experience some intense mental health situations, and they didn't get the care they needed. And so that, you know, and they hurt others, they hurt themselves, they were disfigured in this process of yeah. trying to handle their mental health challenges alone.
Right.
And so that, you know, put me on an odyssey of studying psychology, of uh-huh. like getting my bachelor's degree in psychology and creative writing, and working with teenagers, and, you know, trying to step into those spaces where people who are having mental health challenges. Right. I wrote poetry with people who were incarcerated and who were in mental health treatment centers and so forth, mm-hmm. trying to step in and share space with them and facilitate them making art. So as a way of one disrupting the isolation, but gotcha. Also, you know, guiding them on a path of healing.
Right.
And so the book came about through a lot of that work and through a lot of that experience. I started mm-hmm. writing the book in 2012. And mm-hmm. I completed the first draft in 2017.
Okay.
And then through about 12 revisions, got it to the point where I was ready for a publisher to publish it. And yeah, so I'm so grateful they did.
Oh, great. What's one piece within that whole story that you love?
I love the fact that I love how the last twist came about. Mm-hmm. I needed the son, the main character, his name is Malachi Loud McCrally, and uh-huh. He's Native American. And I needed to add a twist in there to make the plot better. You know, the novel needs mm-hmm. to be lyrical, but the novel also needs plot. It is it is artifice. And so I loved how the twist came about. It was the last thing I thought of. I was in a very low place with the book. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure, you know, it was getting rejected a lot, and I wasn't sure where it should go. And I turned to Loud's mother, the mother figure, and she didn't have too much screen time. And so I thought of a twist involving her. that could give her more agency and more of a spotlight. And the book is actually dedicated to my mother. And the book, even though it's very, you know, boy heavy, it's actually a book about mothers and sons at its heart. Ooh. And so I love that I found that, that I discovered it, or I was granted it from above, or where. It's a much better book with having some of the character's mom in it more, and having her relate to that final twist. Yeah.
Right. And how difficult, or what was your challenge bringing, you know, one side, which was like, as I hear, history that you didn't know, you know, and in cultures maybe you didn't know, to bring it into the true side with what you do know, like your real, the real part of you.
Yeah, that's right. Because I did have clients and I did have students who were Native American, and I did, you know, I interact with them and have relationships with them. So I knew that side, but I didn't know the some of the other sides, like you mentioned, the history and culture and all that. So yeah, it's just getting out there. You know, I drove to the characters are of the Macaw tribe. They've become estranged from the tribe, though. But it was still important for me to read, to go out there, to form some relationships. I went on a tour. I learned, and I did an interview with one of the tribal members. And I also shared my novel with a Native American novelist buddy of mine. His name is Dennis Staples. He read it. That was really good. And I took some feedback from him. Again, I had to listen to some things I got wrong, and I had to revise again. And so, yeah, that was all a process of sharing and exploring and taking sharing space with and listening to stories. You know, David Bowles says that we should, if you're going to write about someone who's not in your community, we should hold their babies. And what I think he means, but how I enacted that out was by holding their stories, holding the stories of Native American
people. That's right.
And I read so many amazing, throughout this process, I read so many amazing works by Native American authors that I was compelled to write reviews of them. And I got a number of the reviews published, which I was really proud of. And so that was part of the process, too, of holding their stories.
That's beautiful. You have given us, you know, me some new insight. And I'm so excited to read this new book that I'm really excited to get a hold to this book. So, audience, you should get a hold to this book, because I believe that Sean has really like dropped some gems here about publishing, book publishing. I like it. And I know you love it. So I'm not going to hold them too long, but I want one last thing I want from you, Sean. If you could write a single uncompromising sentence, just one, that would be carved into every public square in the world and serve a true purpose, what would it be?
That is a really good, that's a good question, Edna. Oh man, you're making me work for it today. I love it. To work and to love.
Oh, that's good.
To work and to love. And I'm cribbing off Sigmund Freud here. It was attributed, commonly attributed to him. I always quote my betters. But yeah, he said that the main thing about mental health and the whole field of psychology that he more or less founded is, you know, to work and to love. If you can find some work that pays you some money and you can love somebody, that's you've got it made, you know? And so often when people are lost or people are having difficulty in life, it's because they're challenged in their work or they're challenged in love. Yeah. And so I think if you can find good work and you can find somebody to love, you know, you're in clover.
Yes. Well, I want you to know that last piece that you gave us, this was for me first. I really appreciate that. It just, you know, honored my heart and it just clung to it. So it was really great. Sean, this was absolutely illuminating. Your insights on purpose, truth, and the necessary discomforts of truth and real writing are exactly what this podcast is about. Thank you for sharing your experience. We hope to read your book real soon. We read the collection, right? The Wild Familiar and the new novel, right? Whistlepunk Falls.
That's right. This is the new novel. This is my third book. And yeah, there's a poetry collection too. But yeah, Edna, let's do a book swap.
Yes, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Book swap.
I'm on it. I'm on it. And guys, you know, I'll tell you all about it. And remember to look for Sean's book. Once I get his book, he's going to be on my Roku channel. So I'll tell you all about it. He won't even know nothing about it. Don't worry. Don't worry.
I'm just along for the ride, Edna.
All right. So audience, thank you so much for being here. Remember to really keep it real. Thanks so much. And bye for now.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your Kachava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of Kachava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags with code NEWS at Kachava.com. That's 30% off for a limited time at kachava.com, code NEWS.